Hey guys, sorry for interrupting, but I just wanted to tell you about our brand new sponsor, Harry's Razors. You've probably heard of them before listening to other podcasts. You have to give people presents for the holidays, so you might as well give a gift and then help us out here on the pod. You can go to harrys.com/the stew. That's harrys.com/the stew. And then when you use that link, you can get $5 off your order and free shipping during the holidays. So like basically all of this month. And then that helps us out over here on the pod. They make great stocking stuffers. You can get just a little cheap $10 guy if you don't have that much money, or if you're really rich, they have ones that are like $100. You can have them engraved with your name, or you can just do a bunch of commas if you want. They have German-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide a close and comfortable shave. The eucalyptus shave cream that I love seems very expensive looking, but it's not. And like I said before, they start at just $10. So, holidays. Get your shopping done early and take advantage of the free shipping while you still can. Harrys.com/the stew. Hola.
Hey,
you're listening to The Stew. I'm Jason Stewart. Say hello, Andre Canaparo.
Hola.
Hola. We got the food pod going today. It's Thursday in LA, in Los Feliz. Luke Reyes.
How you doing?
Hola.
Guys?
Yeah,
hola.
I like that your name is actually, we started off Spanish.
And I'm like, hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, and then I'm like,
pleasure to meet you. I have Warren.
Yes. Senor Reyes. And you're like, hey, guys, what's up? But that's okay. We just met today. You're a chef here in Los Angeles.
I am. Yeah.
You're opening a ramen place currently.
So we're in the process, the fucking year long process of opening a restaurant, downtown ramen shop, 9th Street Ramen.
Okay.
Which, we're going to do all house made, broth, noodles, that whole works, and pretty traditional, but some fun little spins on that.
We're going to talk. I have a ramen questions.
Cool.
And then you also do La Hoja.
Yeah, La Hoja. Which
La
is,
that's spelled H-O-J-A.
H-O-J-A, which is the fucking biggest thing. We get La Hoja, La Hola. And I'm like, it's fucking La Hoja. Figure it out. Which we actually just made shirts that said, had the definition of the word, how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a cannabis infused events and catering company, which has been pretty fucking fun.
And we have. I'm going to have more questions about that, too.
Weed stuff.
We could. Well, we'll talk about the ramen second. Let's talk. I want to talk about the weed stuff first, I guess.
no bearing the lead on this pod.
Yeah.
He cooks food with marijuana pods.
So food, yeah.
Turn the volume up now.
Well, I've talked on the podcast before about how, and I'm sure you've seen this a lot with the cross-section of marijuana and cooking, where a lot of it is just kind of like bullshit that doesn't really need to happen. Mm. Just like, we made weed, anything.
Fucking exactly.
And that could probably, I don't know if that annoys you or anything.
I mean, that's kind of why I started doing what we're doing, It's like, I just find...
And that's also why I had you on the pod, because if you're just one of those weedy chefs,
then... making weed brownies.
I wouldn't have slid in the DMs.
I find the whole... general cannabis cooking that exists now in the mainstream really fucking corny, mm-hmm. It's like
all weed culture or 98%
honestly,
of weed culture.
It's
got to mimic the percentages for the most part.
I would say I've grown up in cannabis, surrounded by cannabis culture. I obviously don't fucking, now I'm back involved in it, but went the whole, Puerto Rican kid selling weed at 16 living in Massachusetts and driving to Vermont.
I thought you looked familiar.
Yeah, you're like, you used to score for me. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're like, Jorge. Yeah, got it.
About that 20 hour you play, it's in the mail. You got that.
So
right?
Driving up to Vermont. To make the pickup.
Yeah, to pick up weed and driving down to Connecticut to sell it to fucking college kids, I think it was past statute of limitations. We can talk about
that's
it now
fine.
On air.
Hell yeah.
Well, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be legal.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Cool. I'm good. Yeah, but then, getting into cooking and kind of, other than smoking it, I don't really even smoke anymore, but I've just surrounded. I have a lot of, yeah.
Get out of here.
I use CBD.
Literally, you're off the pod now.
Like, oh, okay, guys.
Fucking dork.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool.
I thought you were cool, man.
Actually, guys, I'm a cop.
Yeah, that's right.
You're all busted.
This is another one.
Everyone listened to the podcast. You're arrested.
Fool me once.
Yeah.
No, I just found, I find cannabis culture as a whole, a lot of it's so really corny. Like the marketing, it's like, hey, it's a weed, it's a bear with a weed leaf, like Stoner Joe's brownies. And like, so kind of getting into it. And, you know, I did a TV show that's about to air. It's like a Top Chef, but with weed. And I wasn't even really involved in cannabis that much at the time. I had done like a few pop-ups. And I did kind of well on it, and I was like, okay, well, how do I, you know, turn this into something? And then I really started researching it, and I reached out to some friends that were involved in it, and that you know, CO2 Clear and Ziki Farms, that now they're our main source of oil and flour. And we started thinking about, okay, like, what can we do other than fucking infuse it with butter and coconut oil?
Right.
So they have proprietary infusion techniques, and now we've infused soy sauce, sake, like, you know, sesame oil, every fucking thing. So literally, now I no longer cook things that are just fucking, you know, about the weed. It's like, okay, let's make a dish and then figure out how to incorporate a certain strain or a amount of THC. And it's all microdosed, because like, we've all, you know, I certainly have fucking had, and I'm sure you guys, edible experiences where it's a fucking nightmare.
Everyone has
an entire brownie and you're like tripping. Like that was my last experience about a year and a half ago. I woke up hungover and ate a cake that my brother had left in the fridge. I was like, fucking egg cake. Yes.
You know, yeah. Baby's back.
And I ate the whole piece of cake. And like an hour later, I was literally on all fours. It felt like I was tripping. Like my whole body was like circular. So like that kind of shit. And that's the story that most people tell when they talk edibles, which is, you know, it's like, okay, well, how do we make it something that's pleasurable?
So for one of your, so like I show up to an event that you were catering, a La Hoja event.
Yeah.
Say, what is it? Let's say it's four courses.
Yeah.
How much THC am I going to consume over the course of the evening?
So we try to do...
If I don't do any upsells.
Yeah. If you don't add on the fucking shave truffle. So we try to do somewhere between like 20 to 25, maybe max 30 milligrams THC in a meal.
Okay.
Which is a good amount. And for some people, you know, everyone has their own, you know, body chemistry.
Yeah, like for me, I wouldn't be like calling my mom and telling her goodbye.
Yeah.
But
you'd be high.
But I would be good and high.
Yeah.
But if Andre did 30 to the head, he'd be, you know,
flying.
They say 25 milligrams is usually like a basic
that's
good edible dose for getting stoned.
And that's
Are you serious?
25 milligrams for sure.
25 milligrams is kind of like the base level, but that's the thing.
10 milligrams is where you're like just past microdosing level of edible, but you're not anywhere.
Have you taken 25 to the dome, Andre?
Sure.
Yeah.
Damn.
And you
never mind. Andre's
cannabis
cool.
Like frequently?
Not frequently, but I prefer. Yeah, I mean, I would say like my big curiosity once medical marijuana became kind of more established was to kind of see the consistency of what and the range of what was available in the edible market. And I find it a lot of times, especially like in the candy area, to be wildly
inconsistent. Mental. Yeah.
I think it's kind of doing a disservice to what really is the potential for the market.
For sure. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, so what we do is we'll try and do each course. Like we did a dinner this past week for a bunch of food writers and fucking other friends and stuff. And we started,
they're all dead.
They're all died.
They're all dead.
Well, that's all we're talking
about.
So
so you're here to speak for them.
Time of death, 4:20.
Sick. But we did an oyster bar. So each oyster was infused, like we made a mignonette. We infused the white wine vinegar with THC, and each dose for each of the oysters was 1.5 milligrams. So average person has like, you know, six oysters unless you're fucking going off.
Right.
And then, you know, but that's what we tell people is like, hey, here's the baseline. Here's how much is in everything. And you can make the choice yourself. You know, if you want to double down on portions, go off, man. You know, like some people will scale back and just have three. And some people are like, okay, I'm aware of whatever it is and I'll eat, you know, 12 oysters. Mm-hmm. I'll eat 100 oysters and die, you know?
So the people,
and that happened, you know, there's a dead.
The people you're getting your flour and your oil from, are they specifically in edibles or they do everything?
No, they're not. Actually, our partnership with them is
also for listeners at home who don't know, flower is what we're referring to as just marijuana, yeah, as you would normally see it, like in a bag.
Or for my mom, it's a lid.
Or for a lady of the reefer night from the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, my mom called it reefer the other day. She's like, oh, you mean your reefer business? I'm like, yeah, fucking mom, my reefer business.
That's in 1970s.
How's your little reefer business doing? She's,
I'm like, yeah, we had an event last night for the reefer business. My mom's not 90. That sounds like she was 90.
This goes back. I think the first time I got busted with pot, my mom was like, well, how much do you have? And I was, and I don't know, I was in junior high, and I was like, I don't know, it's just not a lot. She's like a lid? And I was like, what the fuck is a lid? I don't know what a lid is. Nah, it wasn't a lot. Fits in a baby's hand. I don't know.
Yeah, a lid is a...
What is a lid?
I think it was like an ounce.
Like a lid can be like a lid on a pirate.
I think the reference goes back. They say it, they talk about it in Nice Dreams in Cheech and Chong, but I think a lid was referred to kind of like a lid of a trash can, kind of. But
it was a large amount of pot.
It was like at least an ounce of pot was like a lid.
The lid of a trash can.
Lid of a trash can.
Listen up, kids. Back in the day, trash cans had lids on them that you would pull off. They weren't just,
and there was just pot underneath.
And they were just filled with weed.
And that's how you would figure out how much pot to buy every day.
Yeah, that's how you would trade for your food back when Jason was a kid.
So the flower is just normal marijuana, and then the oil is where it's
extracted,
exactly, and then that would be injected into other foods or rubbed on your body or put in your urethra or under your eyelids.
Don't ever do that, and that's not a thing.
Speaking of pee hole weed, they do like the body oil stuff now, which is like...
Yeah,
I mean,
Jason's
just
got
smoke
a friend
a joint. That's what I say. Yeah. But not no diss to anyone making weed.
Well, you know,
oil.
I say the same thing about putting pot in food.
Yeah.
Just smoke a joint and then eat the food.
And or do both. You
I
know?
Say the same thing about Coke. Smoke it.
Just smoke a little.
Yeah. I don't know
just
why
smoke
it's
a rock.
Be,
I don't
smoke
know why
it.
You got to go any other route.
Yeah. I don't know why all these guys are snorting it nowadays.
The reason I asked that question, if they were specific to edibles, is because I'm really curious, since you're so focused in culinary with marijuana. Is the extraction process, are you finding anyone kind of leaning towards more flavor once they have consistency dialed in with like the dosage? Like, since there's different extraction methods and different kind of chemicals you can use, are they playing with ways to get the most flavor or different flavors outside
so that
just
would be
the
like,
strains of weed?
Yeah. So what they do is, I mean, they completely extract. Like, they make their own pens, they make the oil for the pens, and they usually separate the terpenes, which is what the flavor is.
Okay.
They separate the terpenes from the oil. So when we infuse something, like we get it, we just get something and you could taste it. I wouldn't recommend you dunking your finger in this fucking oil because you'll be the most high guy ever.
Right.
But it has no taste. And that is, you know.
So it's like olive oil or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. So that's what we use to infuse things. Now, if we want to add a terpene, which is a flavor to it, like we did with we infused sake, Jumai Ginjo recently, and we infused it with Jack Hare, which is a strain of cannabis.
I've never heard of that one before.
Oh, you don't know Jack Hare?
I'm just kidding. I'm familiar with Jack. Okay.
Pierce
Steve. And that had like a floral, minty flavor, and also the psychoactive element to it was it made you excited. It's like a awakening bud.
Mm.
And we started the meal with that. So we infused the sake with that. And we use it almost as like an amuse in the way that, okay, it primed you to get ready for the rest of the stuff. And it tastes, you know, it'll awaken your taste.
So we've gotten to the point with the furthering technology of being able to not just put it in fats. Now that you can put it in oils or alcohols or sakes or all these things.
And that's you know,
that's
all
what's
credit
really
to CO2
exciting.
Clear. It's like they won't even fucking tell me how to. It's like completely proprietary. I'm like, oh, I'm doing an interview for Vice, and they want to know how we do it. And they're like, well, tell them too bad. Tell them we do it, and it's proprietary.
Does Coca-Cola tell you how they make their shit?
Yeah,
hell no.
Exactly. And I get it. You know,
absolute sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So
they've been doing
it's
it for 20 years. Yeah, exactly.
So that's really like, I mean, now that this has opened up this whole other world, it's kind of like as a chef, you've been doing flavor pairings on like a two-dimensional level.
Exactly.
And this is kind of like a third dimension of you're doing a flavor pairing with another element that never existed before.
With the being high.
And now it also has a body and a mental aspect to it as well. Exactly. And pairing that with other things that have those, like a tequila is a stimulant and whiskey is a depressant and weeds are uppers and downers and they have these different flavors. It's a daunting thing.
Yeah,
it's like
I mean,
DNA.
It's interesting. It's yeah, it's you know, it's something I'm still learning about on a daily fucking basis as we play with different flavors and different, you know, versions of infusion and levels of infusion. But it is cool to kind of like working with these guys that, you know, with CO2 and Ziki Farms to say, okay, well, you guys know the science of the infusion stuff, and I know, like, okay, how I want it to taste, and also the kind of, for lack of a fucking better term, like the journey of the tasting menu or the event it might be. So we want them to start with course one and then finish by course four or five and be able to still have wine. Or if we did like an event a couple weeks ago with Stillhouse Whiskey where they made a CBD cocktail. And so, like, you know, we kind of play with how the night turns out, which is, it's another level of than just fucking, okay, we're going to serve salad, fish, meat. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is cool.
Is the majority of the food you're cooking then using the tasteless extraction, would you say?
It is, yeah. More so? 100%, yeah. It's like, you know, it depends
so
on...
So you're scared is what you're saying?
No.
Shut up.
Well, I want to know what, to that point, what does weed pair with flavor-wise?
I mean, again, it's like...
Or do we even know yet?
Yeah, it's earthy, Jason. Duh.
I know it's earthy,
it
but
pairs
like,
with more weed. Ugh,
it's such a unique flavor and scent.
It is.
I'm
well,
curious
well,
to
like
see like
one,
what really.
You know, each bud, obviously, you fucking smoke, so. Mm-hmm.
I guess it's like what goes with wine, and you're like, which wine?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. It's like which flower are you smelling? Which terpene? You know, because the amount that they from the terpene, like the concentration of it, it's like you open up a jar that looks like a sample fucking perfume bottle,
right.
And you smell it, and it's like, holy shit, it's like
right.
Pungent as fuck. So like each one of them, if you're using, you know, you're using a specific strain, can pair with literally whatever the fuck you want, you know, which is, it's also cool. And it's also, and to, you know, I guess my detriment and the learning curve that we have as we're doing it is, you know, we're learning and we're using those things every day. So every time we do, we're like, okay, let's try and use, you know, this kind of terpene in this dish. And it's like, okay, that didn't work. Or let's do that. So
what about the legality of it?
I mean, that's kind of the weird gray area that we're in until right. January. So January, it's going to be recreational legal, which is fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's still
it'll be good for your little grass business that you got going on.
Yeah, exactly.
You can move a lot more lids.
A lot more
that
lids.
Way.
Yeah, I was going there. Yeah, so many lids. Yeah, I mean, it'll be cool. And also, because of what we're doing, which is we're kind of take away some of that stigma of, like you said, like why not just smoke a joint? And like you know, everyone won't just smoke a joint. You know, some people are like, okay, whether it's for medicinal or even recreational, they don't want to just smoke. They're like, okay, so if I can get them into, you know, coming and doing a tasting menu, which is a little more elegant in their eyes and still and make it a whole experience. Like we have an artist doing fucking painting or whatever shit it might be.
Yeah.
We have a DJ,
it kind of has its own ecosystem that all those people with shared interests.
Yeah. And we are giving, you know, like we put butt out on the flour on the tables as well. So like the people who smoke, like at the end of like we had dinner the night and at the end of the dinner, like, fucking these people are like, oh, that was great, and I'm high, but I'm going to roll a joint and smoke. So the people who are going to smoke are going to smoke, but this is also complimentary. And the people who are new to the whole thing or just like, oh, I'm really curious, oh, edible food, you know, like that's not, like I said, a goo ball outside of a fish concert. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
Like, shouts to Massachusetts.
I was going to say, you really are from Massachusetts.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's kind of entering with this whole recreational thing, this new version of legality, a new crowd of people that we hope to.
So before that, it's kind of like private, or you're doing events where people would have to show their medical marijuana card.
Because
I've been to some parties like that.
I've been
to parties like that where they'll have like a bud bar or like, and you just show up. And it's so, like, people so don't care about the legality of, or the illegality of marijuana in California at this point, where it's like, just show me your ID and, like,
show me you're over 21.
And
like,
we have
sleep anxiety.
I'll go on a website and you got it now. Like, nobody cares anymore.
I have really bad stress. Okay, yeah, here's some weed. You know, which, you know, that is a medical use and people, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, we've kind of been... The events we've done so far have been, you know, you bring your card, your recreational or your card and medical card, and as long as you're over 21, we'll serve you. You know, but it'll be, you know, to get some of the bigger crowds in and get people more interested that aren't haven't been just smoking weed before that would be fun. Mm-hmm. In this new year, because we haven't done that yet.
Are you doing anything to prepare for that once it becomes legal? Are you so setting up like a bigger infrastructure? Is the back end doing numbers?
We actually just got partnered up with a California olive oil farm. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the first ever fresh press. Like literally, we gave a bottle last week to a bunch of writers that were the first people to get one. Now I'm gonna ask to bring you guys one. Sorry,
it's fine.
I'm like, oh, I give them to everyone except for you guys. Like, oh, tight, cool. Yeah. It's a fresh pressed olive oil, so from Nuvo Farms in California, and they press it, you know, and bottle it, and we infuse it, and it's a new line that we're launching in unison with those guys and CO2 Clear. That'll come out in January, and that's going to be in 85 stores up and down the state, and we're going to be doing a lot of sales, and we're hoping to, you know, to be on the market first with that kind of stuff and get that into fucking everywhere as it comes legal and get that, because our main thing, like I said, about the cannabis branding as a whole is we want you to have a bottle of this olive oil on the table, and then the name of the company is Verejo, so we want you to have Verejo on the table, and you could have, you know, your aunt and uncle come over for dinner, and they're not going to be, well, you know, it could be sitting on your counter, and they're not going to be like, oh, why are you fucking stoner, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's very subtle. Obviously, it's labeled. It tells you how much is in there per dose. It's going to be, you know, 5 milligrams THC per dose, but it's not something that
it's not like having
overhead.
A bong on the table.
Exactly. So again, that's another really nice entry way to get someone into. It's a good gift. People can be like, hey, you know, you don't really into weed, but here's something. Just try it. THC light infused, and the taste wise, it's fucking delicious. Like this is the best. You know, Nuvo is all, you know, award winning, like world award winning fucking olive oil.
This sounds really good. You know, I know my mom listens to this pod, but it looks like she knows what she's gonna get in her stocking this year for Christmas.
Olive oil.
Christmas is gonna be good this year, Mom.
Yeah, I hope you got Netflix on deck. You don't want to sleep in that couch,
just drizzling that on Christmas dinner. You know,
yeah, one
for me, one for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, gone are the days where you sneak to the fridge and then take a little nitrous hit off the whipped cream.
Yeah.
I mean, those are still here. Yeah.
Those aren't going.
A little bit on the pumpkin pie, a little bit for you.
But also, I mean, what do you do when you're like, oh, my parents got this weed olive oil.
Yeah.
And then you're 13 years old and you're tiptoeing down the stairway at 2 in the morning and just take a little rub.
And mom and dad are fucking down there pouring olive oil and everything.
No, I mean, what do you do when they're asleep and you got a little slice of bruschetta and you drizzle up? Are we going to have to teach our kids to?
Yeah, I think it's like anything else. It's just moderation.
Are we going to hide the weed oil in the gun safe?
Yeah, it's just like having a bottle of liquor. You know, it's.
Yeah, I guess so.
Informing your kids is like, you know, hey, this is what this is. I don't think you shouldn't be hiding it, because cannabis, I think it's not. Because
it's from
decriminalization. Exactly. It's not, you know, you don't have a fucking olive oil infused with meth, or maybe you do. I don't know what kind of shit you're into, but, you know, it's from the earth.
I need to interview them.
Yeah, get them on here. It's from the earth, and it's, you know, it's good for you. It's not super strong. It's, you know, microdosed. And so.
What about a CBD schmaltz?
I'm into that.
Because I was just thinking about it. Andre made these roasted potatoes that were just more schmaltz than potato almost, and it got so crispy it looked like the surface of Mars or something like that. Like,
that sounds fucking great.
The DMs were blowing up off of the crispy potatoes.
How much you cook them all the way through in schmaltz? Or?
No, so I did like the British style where you parboil, break them up a little bit in the pan, just so you get like kind of that surface area
roughing up the surface,
and then put it in the oven. It was like 500 with the schmaltz.
That sounds fucking great.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Schmaltz all over everything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It was good, but then, like,
look, the other thing
could
too,
be better is what I'm saying.
The other thing, too, about this conversation about, like, what is, like, a bottle of weed, olive oil, like, or what's that to have in the house? Like, this is,
oh, yeah.
This is look at that guy. So generational because I will always look at something with weed in it and be like, damn, there's weed in that.
Yeah.
I will, like, it will be legal for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It will be, like, served in, you'll buy it at liquor, you will buy flour in liquor stores, and I'll still be like, damn, that's weed.
You're like, oh, man, hide that weed.
Yeah,
well, I guess
I just think it's too ingrained.
I'm the same, because I'm we're full of grown, grown adult men.
I mean, I'm 34 years old. I've seen, you know.
But every Christmas, when you get the little sampler pack of the chocolates that have the different alcohols in them, mm-hmm. like the Grand Marnier and the Jack Daniels, every year I get those and I'm like, there's alcohol in here. Like, so the same thing.
I get wasted.
Yeah, like, I'm going to eat one. I can't, I'm just going to eat one. That's crazy, man.
No, but there will be kids that will look at marijuana, or maybe now do, or some more elevated adults will look at pot and be like, yeah, it's alcohol, it's anything recreational, it's anything to relax.
My fucking mom smokes it every Friday and she's annoying. Yeah. Oh, I hate it.
I mean, I was just in Seattle like a couple weeks ago, and it's recreation up there, and we were outside of a bar, and some dude smoking a joint, and I doubled. I'm like, yo, the guys are smoking a joint. I'm like, oh wait, this is fucking 2017. People are smoking. smoking joints everywhere, you know. But still, it's, you know, I'm same thing.
I think
thing
that'll
from the
last.
Like,
I think that will. Yeah. I'll hold on to that like a bad hip.
Yeah,
I'll always be
right.
Damn, that's weird.
Well, maybe when we start getting that weed, so when weed is everywhere, are we going to actually start smoking our foods with? With marijuana? Is that, I mean...
Like using flour to smoke a brisket.
That's what I'm saying, baby.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Is it a good idea? I mean, it sounds...
It seems like a waste of
fucking weed. Is marijuana more expensive than hickory?
Yeah, it's like... Unless if you're really fucking fancy and, you know, just like literally lighting money on fire.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of questions in there. But you just have to try. I mean, I think you'd have to try it. I would say legally being able to grow it while also not legally being able to sell it means if you want to grow enough weed to smoke a brisket just to see what happens, then it's not expensive. Right? You know, depends on where you look at
it. Yeah, I guess in California.
If you're going to buy recreational weed tax at 35% retail, that would be an expensive endeavor. To smoke brisket, especially because it's all...
Yeah, well, that was a $300 experiment.
Because it's all leaf. It's not hardwood, right?
Yeah.
So your smoke's going to disappear, and it's not going to... I mean, it's going to disappear in seconds.
Yeah.
Once you get it to actual
smoking
point.
But I guess maybe if you, like,
point.
Smoke and cryo and...
You
got
to hot
that,
box
you know,
it, yeah.
Figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to trap it. You wouldn't be able to smoke it in, like, a traditional Texas smoker. And then what, I mean, it's just like how much flavor are you imparting? How much is it worth it? Why do it? Are you imparting any THC or CBD into anything being smoked?
Is your brisket
like
going to get a contact high, is what you're saying?
Yeah, like will
you eat like one slice of brisket and be like the most high person ever?
Well, I think that's one of those scenarios where you just like, let's bring your friend over and see if he's just like, let's watch
try this.
Yeah, Mikey likes it. Just like, what do you think about the Reuben? It's been a half hour. Huh? No?
Yeah. As a friend is rolling around.
We'll check
in
another half hour, see how you're doing.
So, well, let's shift gears into the ramen world, because I'm curious about that. You're making your own ramen stock from scratch, which is always something that I've been like fascinated with because it's such a very interesting cooking method, and it takes hours and hours or overnight. And
well, our process for our tonkatsu is approximately 3 days. So it's I mean, from the time we get the meat and bones into the restaurant, the hypothetical restaurant, because we're not open yet, but as we've done this, it's a day of soaking the bones and the meat and purging blood and making sure they're as clean as possible before we get them in the pot. Yeah.
So so you just soak the bones in water?
So we soak
just cold water?
So we soak them in cold water overnight for 24 hours, and then that removes a lot of the blood that's actually still in the bones and in the meat, because we use pork. Well, we use a mixture of pork bones and some pork cuts in our tonkatsu broth, and a little bit of pig head. So we actually purge most of the blood from that. Then we start by parboiling. We parboil the bones and the meat again, or for the first time, and then that, you know, we remove that. We strain that water, scrub the bones, scrub the meat.
So that's like remove the impurities and things like that.
Yeah. So make sure that, you know, we want it to be as clean as possible. We use filtered, you know, all filtered water for all the processes. It's about being a really clean, flavored.
Essentia?
Tonkatsu.
Is it essentia water that you're using?
It's
not a cheap ramen, is what you're saying.
It's Fiji water.
Okay. Yeah. So
is it hard to source the bones? Are they very available? Are they expensive? I've always been curious, like on a wholesale, like on a scale that a restaurant would need, where like the majority of the base product is bone.
Yeah. Or I mean, a lot of that is depending on even the pig. It's depending on the pig that you're using. You know, right. You can get bones that are fucking dirt cheap that you would get. And again, I've used for lots of things. You can get at a carniceria around the corner that if you want to make ramen at home, go out. Those are the ones. So you know, like you don't have to use like a fucking amazing, you know, Berkshire
or pork.
But yeah, exactly. Like you don't have to use a pig that's grown for you, for that's raised for you, like we use. And you can use these bones, and you're going to get a great tasting broth. You know, as long as you get most of the impurities out, you know, soak them, get them as clean as possible. You can still make a really good pork based broth. Yeah, but the price wise, it can vary because we bring in a whole pig, so it's usually a base cost of around like two something a pound, and that's spread out too. So if we're obviously not throwing a pork loin in the fucking broth,
right?
So some things, you know, you spread that out, that costs out around to a 100-pound pig. It kind of varies, you know.
What? Just rough numbers, what, how much bone do you have from a whole pig? How much stock can you make from that? A day's stock, 2 days stock?
A whole pig will make us about like we bring in half a pig at a time, and then we bring additional chicken bones and pig bones in. So we're not bringing in, because as of right now, as we've been testing, we don't need, you know, we don't need two fucking 30 pounds worth of pork loin and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But for a half a pig would make us probably about like 2 days worth of broth.
Wow.
Yeah. And impressive. I mean, 2 days worth of maybe if you're doing like 40 bowls, you know. So it would probably make us like, you know, 47-ounce bowls, you know. But that, again, that's still $1,000 worth of
pork, yeah.
You know, so it's not fucking cheap.
Sure.
Because you think of, we have to do, you know, $6,000 worth of sales on that just to justify us bringing in this pig. So ramen.
The ramen game is a wild one.
People look at fucking soup, you know, and even myself, when I first started eating and fucking with ramen, I look at it, it's like, oh, it's soup. It can't be expensive, but it's pricey, you know, and there's a reason why it's, you know, people can, they charge, you know, whatever the fuck they charge. You look at like Mountain or whatever the fuck, and it's like a $20 bowl of soup, but there's a reason, because he's using mental ingredients in there, you know, not to mention the food costs on the
yeah, I've seen a lot of people complaining about that high dollar ramen at Mountain, MTN, but then the first line of the description of the ramen is like soft shell, or no, it's like snow crab, or like, it's like some kind of crab.
In the ramen. Yeah, I still haven't eaten there.
And you're like, of course it costs $23, motherfucker. It's like...
Yeah, exactly. He's like, you know, I know they're making all their own noodles, and they're using, like, fucking beautiful pigs and shit. And just judging on the stuff, you know, Jelena's great, and it's a, you know, he uses great product, and I'm sure every piece of garnish in there is sourced from the market, so...
If it's available in a purple version, you're using the purple one.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting. I mean, it's especially been such a talking point since Pock closed, too, and Andy Riker talking about fetishizing kind of Asian food in general to be cheap.
Yeah. And I know Dave Chang has talked about that, too. It's like, and it's true. It's like, people look at, they're like, oh, it's Chinese food. Why is it fucking, why are they charging X for it?
Why is it more than $6.95? Which is mental. Like, seven things for a lunch special.
Exactly.
And looking at ramen, I mean, I think there's an association that everybody has from like college or high school or being young or broke or anything. Even people who eat well, I think, still probably, or some, have to remind themselves to not instinctually look at ramen and be, oh, ramen. 25 cents a packet, or, oh, it's soup, or to really kind of, because even I sometimes will look at something, or I remember, you know, eating Pock first couple times being like, why, this is really expensive, and then kind of pulling back and looking like, it's not that expensive, I'm just associating it with kind of the around the corner Thai prices, as opposed to
with Thai
comparing
whatever,
it to any other restaurant serving any kind of cuisine.
100%.
Like, regardless, you strip out the actual genre of food it's coming from, and then it's just, oh, small plates are $8 to $15, and or what, you know, whatever, however you look at it. I think even I still do that, and I would, you know, with the amount of effort and consideration I put into thinking about food, and you know, I don't even cook professionally. I still am like, oh yeah, that's expensive, when it shouldn't be like, no, that's what it costs.
And I get it. It's like, you know, the same shit where we talk about with weed, where it's like, oh, we still get kind of shocked when you see someone smoking. As, you know, ramen wasn't a huge thing. And same thing with, like, the proliferation of, you know, the Asian food that we see, like, the high level of it being done. Or wasn't where I grew up. So I grew up with, you know, eating at fucking China Star restaurant, which is a buffet for $7.99. Yep. And that was just what you, and that was my version of Chinese food. And now it's like,
you
when I go
to blast that orange chicken till you die,
which is fucking great. Don't get me wrong. Too. That's like, when I go home, that's immediately what I do is I go, you know, I'll go to those fucking places. I still love it. Mm-hmm. But as I, you know, went to college and left fucking small town in Massachusetts and went to New York and realized, you know, what actual this ethnic version of food is. Yeah. There's a reason why it can cost X, Y, and Z, you know, and it's kind of training yourself to think, like you said, that it's not just cheap because it's Asian, or it's not just cheap because it's fucking Mexican. It can be, you know, something cool and
well. It's good. It's nice to see the tide turning for all of this with one podcast at a time and one Netflix documentary at a time, letting us know that it's okay to spend too much money on ethnic food.
No, being from Massachusetts, right?
Yeah,
I ask this question all the time of people because one of my best friends. One of my oldest friends, Mark, is from Worcester, and he always talks
about Worcester. Oh, God.
So he but he always talks about his biggest complaint in life is that he can't get chicken fingers with duck sauce
on the West
Coast.
That's like
it. That's it.
That's
right?
It, dude. That's it. And it's fucking mental. Like, I did
chicken fingers with duck sauce.
Chicken fingers with duck sauce is which like is my favorite fucking thing. Like,
which is in Massachusetts more than New York, but you can get it in New York.
You can get it in New York.
East Coast
thing. Yeah, it's
but
very
like,
much
apparently,
Massachusetts.
Like, in Massachusetts, is even like
it's your fish taco.
Zero.
It's I mean, it's essentially cooked very similar to a fucking fish taco. And well, right. It's but it's like a piece of chicken of who knows where the fuck origin, over battered. Like,
don't want to know where it's from.
No interest. It's like thigh meat
three
that's
battered
been sitting on a counter
to one protein
100%,
ratio,
but fucking delicious. And then they take that same chicken finger, and it's like a fucking foot long chicken finger. Yeah. It's just battered and fried and served with sweet and sour sauce. Duck sauce, by the way. Duck sauce is not sweet and sour sauce.
Yeah,
so it looks more like a
but
king
also has
crab
no
leg.
Duck in it.
No duck. It's again, same thing.
Anybody's
it's like
heard
sugar,
of this or seen it.
Plum fucking. Yeah. I don't
some
even know.
Some kind of acid.
And cornstarch, yeah.
It's so like it's like sweet and sour, but it's a little bit darker in color.
It's actually it's like a yellower.
Yeah, it's almost fluorescent
yellow.
Yeah,
it's like fluorescent yellow, not sweet and sour. Sweet and sour is like pinkish.
So what about flavor difference?
I don't know.
To think that
it's kind of sweet.
I like
it's
to think that you guys are
both,
not.
I think they're just both vaguely sweet. You know, I honestly, if you
is duck sauce sour as well?
Duck sauce has 1%. Texture in it too, though. There's like little flecks of who knows what the fuck in duck sauce.
Flecks
maybe
in
that
it?
Duck. Yeah, there's
some
like kind it's
fruit
like it's like maybe fruit
you'd
want to
kind of
like,
hope so.
Like,
maybe.
I think it might be apricot.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, I think it's actually apricot. and then served with fried fucking chicken fingers.
Let's get that on 9th Street Ramen's appetizer menu.
You know, I did some like R&D consulting for a Chinese thing that happened in LA a while ago, and that was the first thing. And they're like, and the owner of it was like, chicken fingers, and I was like, fucking try these, you know? And, and he didn't get it. And it's mainly the nostalgia, which is why I love Genghis Cohen's. Egg rolls. Like my girlfriend works at Genghis Cohen and also friends with the owners. They're great dudes. And I eat their fucking egg rolls literally once a week. I get three orders because I'm a fat piece of shit. And dude, six pieces of egg rolls and I'll just casually eat it throughout the night. Like munch, room temp.
They're closer in size to a burrito than an egg roll.
100%. Yeah.
It's like when you get a burrito at Del Taco, it's like a small, it's like not really a burrito. Like that's what they are, but they're. They're really crunchy.
Yeah.
They're really
super crunchy.
Pork, cabbage.
Thick,
like wheat. I don't know if there's wheat in the wrapper or what's that.
It's girthy.
They're not like the egg rolls that you get for free with whatever shitty like Panda Express fucking meal you get. Like these
not
are
the
substantial. These are like a fucking mini burrito. And
let's talk about
delicious. Perhaps
an infused duck sauce on the shelves.
I mean, that's it. Let's make it happen.
Can we call it stew
duck
sauce?
Yeah. There you go. Whoever is the maker of duck sauce, reach out to me.
Get a shelf stable duck sauce that you'll make.
Oh no,
out
that's
of,
like super. Yeah, that the shelf stable is.
That's a pre-required element of the duck sauce. It has to.
It's not like fresh organic farmers market duck sauce.
It doesn't have to. It's not perishable at all.
No,
it will last longer than we will.
Yeah.
So get that. Infuse it with the CBD.
Oh, I'm so happy to see your enthusiasm for chicken fingers and duck sauce.
It's definitely, yeah, definitely. It.
So is Mark. Mark's
so,
excited.
So for the ramen, are you doing a, like a traditional style, or are you adding your own little flair? Are you adding purple vegetables to it?
Yeah, I mean, some of the, like for the tonkatsu, it's pretty straight up, but we, you know, we're doing the usual garnishes. You see that, you see, you know, we'll use like a soy soaked egg, and we'll do a couple pickled elements to it, but not really. For that tonkatsu is pretty simple, but we also are doing a black ramen, which is we installed a wok into our place. Well, actually we kept one of the woks. We took over Chu's Chinese Kitchen on 9th Street, which is a Chinese restaurant that had been there for like 50 something years, which is fucking mental to see like they've been there that long, and I don't know how they stayed open, but husband and wife.
If that grease trap could talk, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, it did, as I scrubbed it. Holy shit. But yeah, so we kept the wok, and we're doing a black ramen, which would be kind of a variation. That's a pretty specific Tokyo thing that we're actually going out. One of my partners, Masa, used to work there in a, he does clothing now, but he worked in a black ramen shop for a very long time. And he's like, we have to have this. So we're going to actually spend about a month out there before we open. And I'm working with the guys who like, there's like their specialty. And it's mainly, it's a very high heat emulsified tonkatsu broth with a bunch of smoked alliums in it that makes, you know, you see usually that charred black sauce. Mm-hmm. So that we use a bigger version of that that's infused with tare, and that will be infused to our tonkatsu. And you essentially hit it in the wok super fast, and then the tonkatsu, and it emulsifies at very high heat, and that goes in there. So,
I've never heard of it.
Neither have I.
It's not a thing that people do in the States very often.
And I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, it'll be, so that's kind of our flair thing. And then we're doing a chicken soup, which veers a little more towards like almost like a, you know, a Jewish style matzah, like a Jewish style chicken soup. It's chicken and dill, you know, and and yeah, it's really, we use whole chickens, and just same way we kind of do the tonkatsu is where we boil them, get rid of, you know, dump that, clean them, and then we just slowly cook the chicken with, finish it with ginger and dill, and that's it. And then noodles and an egg and a little bit of chicken breast. Awesome. But yeah, the soup's pretty simple, you know. It's, I don't want to, I did the whole, you know, I did a pop-up for a while called Oh Man Ramen, which is where I got like weird with, you know, I was like, oh, let me just, I made it more soup, you know, and also just got out some of the weird shit as I was experimenting and learning about ramen and fucking, but this I've kind of pulled back and been like, okay, like with 9th Street, let's make it just about clean, good broth, really good fucking noodles that we make every single day, and then, and try and keep
the you're making the noodles too.
Yeah, making the noodles in-house.
Son of a gun.
That's a lot.
Don't want to make things easy on myself, you know?
That's a lot.
Yeah, it seems like, the ramen game, you can't halfway it.
Yeah.
It's, well, that's the it's thing all
is
or nothing.
You fuck, it's like I go to a bunch, I eat ramen like twice a week, and a lot of shops in LA use the same Sun Brand noodles. And Sun Brand noodles are fucking great. They're great. Yeah. You know, there's a reason why they're the one that everyone
the,
uses.
The standard across the world, it seems like.
But for me, my thought being, how do we differentiate ourselves? How do I justify what we're doing and make what we do special? Okay, well,
without being a gimmick.
Yeah.
Without actually having it show up on the plate as opposed to something you read about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't make sense to me not to make our own noodles.
And
yeah.
So are you doing like an alternative flour?
No, we're using a mixture of two flours, and then
And ramen, that's the alkaline noodle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the alkaline noodles, yeah. So we're using the twice-baked baking soda and then water and two flours and making everything in-house, yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Where are you getting ramen? Are you getting ramen twice a week in L.A. as research and development, or are you just a ramen lover?
I fucking love ramen. Yeah, that's kind of just how I got into it. It's like, I love...
How are you not fat is what I want to know.
I immediately throw it up.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
Because I love ramen, but like nowadays, I can't eat it more than a few times a year, it seems like, because it just... you just have to eat it all, and it's just so much...
And I know, I eat ramen twice a week, and I will say, a lot of people hate this, but I get it with very light noodles, or I get it with noodles on the side often. And
that's my move.
Yeah.
Noodles on the side is my ramen move.
I have a genetic predisposal towards being a big dude, and I also love to fucking eat. So I run a lot, and I also eat like shit. So the two, I'm still a bigger dude, but... Eating ramen is just trying to like I love the soup, I love broths, and I love the, you know, I'll get like fucking Silver Lake ramen because I live around the corner from it,
Yeah.
And I'll get it with the noodles on the side or light noodles and all the stuff inside of it. And it's still, I just fucking love that pork broth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask,
just
what is your...
I'm just walking around drinking pork and fucking broth pretty much. What's it's like, and, who needs a protein shake?
And I hate running, but if I didn't do it, I'd be 500 pounds.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So where is your favorite ramen in L.A.? I know it can't be Silver Lake Ramen.
No, it depends. You know, it's like...
What's your favorite flour, man?
Yeah, no. I mean, I like Sujito a lot. It depends on what I'm feeling for. It's Sentuku Ramen in Mitsuo Market is probably my overall favorite ramen. Mm-hmm. It's fucking phenomenal. Their chicken miso ramen is fucking lights out. Mm-hmm. Sujita, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially for the noodles on the side, boys.
Yeah.
Sujita is real nice. Really good. And that gluten volume, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, and I talked about this with some friends recently. It's like people shit on Silver Lake. Some people who are more food, you know, they crush it. One, like from a business standpoint, fucking good for you guys. Like
they crush it. Like
it's fucking mental to me. And also, it's just a good straight up. Like I could eat ramen. You know, it's very convenient.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's got two things that just put a bullseye on its back. It's got a line it doesn't deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, of course it deserves it because it has a line. And
it has exactly.
So they deserve
it.
Whatever.
My place doesn't have a fucking line, do it.
But
know?
I look at the line and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
And well, I think that's their name is Silver Lake Ramen.
And that's it. And you're opening in.
So those are your two.
And you're opening in fucking Santa Monica. That was my thing. I was like, you know. But again, we're naming our place Ninth Street Ramen. And God help us if we open a second one. And I'm like, oh, those dipshits, Silver Lake Ramen. Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, right. We built a brand that's got a line.
Exactly.
We got to stay with that.
So,
but it's totally. I think I even probably have talked shit a little bit, just not like bad, but like it's totally fine. But with the line and the name, you just want to hate on it a little.
100%. I mean, but it's that fucking line is
great. It's
fucking bonkers.
It's a great neighborhood ramen shop.
Yeah. There are places that don't deserve the line, but every ramen place in L.A. any day of the week has a line now. It's just the good ones or the bad ones. On the east side or the west side, it's just always a line. I mean, but it's kind of like when you drive by Chipotle and there's a line at the door and you're like, there's a good Mexican restaurant there. There's a good Mexican restaurant there. Why aren't you guys going there? Exactly. And I drive by Silver Lake Ramen, I'm like, just go to Little Tokyo.
People think that line's for Helen Ray's. It's really for Ramen Champ. It just wraps all the way down and then up the stairs. You don't even know.
You guys love ramen, man.
Yeah.
4 hour waits for Ramen Champ.
Yeah.
In July.
Said no one.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to eat it standing up. Are you guys going to have alcohol at Ninth Street?
Beer, wine, sake. Yeah.
Hey.
Yep.
Are you a sake head?
I'm really not. I'm a wine. I would drink wine.
Oh, I love sake.
You know, when I eat fucking ramen, I it's like already so much like a flavor. Yeah. I will drink before or drink after. Like the people who are, when I first started cooking, like when I was like, oh, I got out of work, I'm gonna go get a bowl of ramen, which I fucking love. That was, you know, living near a skateboard, like it was a romanticized version of the whole thing, and go and like have a beer and a ramen. And now if I try to have a beer with a ramen, it'd be a
Hell
fucking
no.
wrap. Yeah. Like, no, I would literally so fall asleep in my bowl of soup, you know? It's just like fucking water, Diet Coke. I'm old, you know.
Yeah, the sake is real nice to have. I mean, I don't know anybody. I'm trying to think for ramen places who gets a cocktail with ramen. Like
that's it.
That doesn't. It doesn't. Really
we thought
exist.
About that whole thing. We're like, oh yeah, we'll get a liquor, and we're like, why the fuck would we do that? Yeah. It's just like that's a
other
thing
with
ramen.
Sake.
Get them in, get them out. You know, it's like get people served because that's ramen. It's like people aren't really. You don't go to a ramen place and just chill over your bowl of soup and have a conversation. It's not that kind of.
You
place.
Sit there quietly, angrily until your food shows up.
Aggressively staring,
and then you just eat it without talking to your loved one.
Yeah,
and
that's like that place. You seen the ramen shop? Have you seen that ramen shop in, I think it's Brooklyn or wherever, that they have, you literally have an enclosed fucking booth, and there's a panel in front of you, and you have panels on the side of you, and...
Do you put a quarter in to order?
So
like,
no,
sounds like a peep show, baby.
And then there's a naked woman, oh wait, that was
a
peep show.
Wait, no, that was a lusty lady, there was no ramen anywhere.
And then you
anywhere.
Eat your top ramen in front of a naked woman.
Pretty sure.
It's in Times Square, no one? Yeah. It's in 1980s Times Square. Yeah. A panel slides open in front of you, a woman takes your order and then closes it, comes back, drops a fucking, or a man takes your order, you know, 2017, slides it open and closed and hands you your bowl of soup, and you're left fucking alone, and you can stare at your fucking iPhone, and it's insane, and it's also, You know, it's makes all of the fucking sense in the world.
Does the iPhone have 911 and then just like ready to dial until like in this weird like 8mm murder kill?
I've never
ramen
heard of
box.
this ramen place. That
this is wild.
I like
this
it.
Sounds like a snuff yeah, film meets a restaurant.
Pants optional in this place. Yeah. I'm assuming.
I mean, I think you might get in trouble for that. Yeah. It's not a fully enclosed yeah. box.
Mm-hmm. How do you eat ramen with a ball gag in your mouth? That's my big question.
That is my life question. Right,
it doesn't
there.
Check out. I get the one with the hole in the middle. I get it.
You know the one.
Stupid question.
It's on my Amazon wish list.
Stupid question.
Christmas.
All right. My bad.
We have reached the part of the podcast where we talk about the best thing we ate all week. Mm-hmm. And I'll go first so you can prepare if you want, Luke. Unless you want to go first, Andre.
No, I'm going to...
I went to Baru a few days ago with Farley from Eater. Had a nice little lunch, and we ordered a bunch of stuff on the menu, but they had this this mushroom-based arancini, like the rice ball that's battered and fried. But it looked more like a kind of like a musubi, and it was very, very mushroom-heavy, and it was sitting on this base of, it was kind of like to mimic a cheese-like consistency, but it was really full of this wild mushroomy umami. You guys can look at
that
it.
Sounds fucking
and
great.
Then on top of it was like a little endive spear, and then a little raw green onion. So it's like those kind of bright, little bit sour, fresh, crispy flavors with this super umami fried mushroom gooey sauce. I really like the flavor, and it was like a very interesting appetizer. And it's probably like $9.
It looks like a jalapeno popper.
I still haven't.
It looks
there.
Weird as hell. You gotta go to.
Yeah,
it's so bar, cool, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was there, and there's just books everywhere, and like noodles drying, and pickles being pickled, yeah. And they're playing like Metallica, Kill 'Em All, and there's just like some like weird guy like who doesn't even speak English is just like, here's some pickles that we made with like pineapple juice, and like we made kimchi out of. The coolest thing you've ever seen before, and they're just bringing out little snacks, and like even the cookie, like a chocolate
chip. Is that
chip
just like a normal thing? Or is that because you're with Farley?
A little bit of half and half. But like you can go and order like the Korean pickles that they make there, and it's stuff you've never. It's like a weird flavors you've never had before.
Yeah,
they just kind of do everything. Like everyone wants to do something in their own way to make it unique to their own, but I feel like they do it the perfect just a little bit. And it's still the same. Like, their chocolate chip cookie still tastes like a chocolate chip cookie, but it has a couple little weird elements. You don't even know what it is, but you just like how it tastes.
It has mushroom cheese in it.
It has mushroom cheese. But they're not doing a bunch of extra shit, is what I'm saying.
Dope.
And you can, and all
the... I tried a bite of there's something at one of those fucking food events at, like, Paramount recently, or, like, last year, and it was fucking delicious. It did, I think it had, like, that pineapple kimchi. It had some, like, really funky kimchi in it. And I just remember thinking, like... Oh, that was a bunch of like it was like up and down flavor wise. It was like very deep. I was like, oh shit, that's dope. I always find it so hard to go to the places that everyone's like, oh, you have to go there. So I'm just like, oh god, I'm sure it's like either a fucking line or I don't want to be let down.
Just go there for I mean every place. Yeah, I mean Farley said it when he was on this podcast. He's like most restaurant, like every restaurant is either like pretty good or pretty bad, and none of them are awful. Or perfect, you know, they're all just like pretty good.
Yeah,
but you should go to Baru like during lunch, and it's not a line at all. It's cool. Fine.
Yeah, it's definitely
as worth. Soon as Baru starts selling.
Also so. Worth, I mean, considering how interesting the food is, one of those places too that worth a little bit of a wait. I don't know how bad the wait gets, but
well, I mean, I wait for Baru. Yeah, I wait for all sorts of fucking trash food all the time. So,
like, I mean, we were just talking about stuff like ramen, so you know,
yeah,
we're gonna,
we do live in LA,
and I like any restaurant where you know that the money that you're paying for the food is all going towards the food and not like any bullshit like the website designer and like their plates and their aprons and their lighting and their Sonos and all that shit that is.
It's like
that they didn't do well anyway.
Yeah.
If it's just like this dish costs $10 and it's just going to come out on a plate and that's going to be the star.
Yeah.
We put all the money on that and not the bullshit.
That's cool.
The best thing I ate was one of the best sandwiches I've ever had in my life. Very surprising. I didn't expect it. It was from Cookbook in Echo Park. And I just grabbed one of their sandwiches. I was buying a few things. They carry the Camino vinegar from the restaurant in Oakland. When they get it in very random spurts.
That's like the red wine vinegar that's really artisanal? The red wine vinegar they artisanal?
Make themselves, and I think it's incredible. Sometimes I get it for gifts.
Good with a little bit of weed in it, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but they also... It goes,
everything goes a little bit more...
Hold on, let's be honest.
You hear what this guy's
that
saying?
That bar with a little bit of weed in it.
I mean, that's the next level.
It is.
But don't go expecting it to be there because they get it randomly. And so if anybody's listening to this and wants it, call ahead. But
it's red wine vinegar where you drink it and you're like, oh, this is what...
It's so incredibly complex and wild. Oh, I got some in there. You should try it before
yeah.
you go. It's also $20 a bottle. So it's a little bit of like, it's worthwhile for a gift. But so I just grabbed the sandwich and kind of didn't ask any questions or think about it. It looked nice, roast beef. And it was just mind-bogglingly good.
Oh,
it was
shit.
On what was like a figasa or a focaccia, depending on where you're pronouncing it from in Italy. But
figasa.
Really thin, really amazing. And I know that they've carried Bubba and Graham's in the past, so I don't know if that's who's making it. And I didn't, I just put it in the car and started eating it and was blown away. So I was going to ask them a few things, and I was already gone. But it had like arugula and maybe kind
so it was
of
roast
like
beef.
A mild creamy cheese, some horseradish, arugula.
And it was cold, not
yeah,
hot.
Yeah.
Super thin sliced, medium rare roast beef.
Sure. Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay.
But it was really, really good, really wild. So now it's been kind of on my brain for the past couple of days to go back and just see if it was that one day out of 10 years.
Maybe it was
made
a mirage.
Perfect sandwich. Or maybe if that's like the. If that's the day-to-day, if that's the ham and egg going out of that place, holy shit.
If that's
man,
the day
my God.
I went to that place for the first time today, and I was blown. I followed them on Instagram, and I never actually, and I went in this morning, I was like, holy shit, this place is fucking, like, the great produce selection, and, like, great, like, products. Yeah.
To me, it is a perfect example of, like, a high-low neighborhood market.
Yeah.
Where you can spend a little bit of money if you want to on something expensive, but they also have arugula, you know, that is as good as any farmer's market arugula for $5 a bag.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like they do a really good job of being reasonably priced and then also kind of having, you know, some higher end deli.
Yeah, I mean,
style,
I saw like in the fucking case they had like lamb shoulder, like, you know,
yeah,
things
beautiful.
That didn't, yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that in like a little store in fucking Echo
and
Park.
And
I
don't
maybe
know.
Now it is.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know what anniversary they're celebrating, but they are an outlier because they like that at least like 7 years old. Old, I would imagine.
Really?
It's been there for a long time.
If not more.
Oh, wow.
And there's nobody that has come close to them, including to this day, on the east side of LA doing what Cookbook does. And you would think, like, in this kind of current market for food and ingredients and expectations of people kind of who live out here, you'd think that there'd be like five copycats, and they're still doing it to me better than anybody else. I think it's a little.
I mean,
impressive.
Is anyone really doing it?
Tiny.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And a store like that can stay in business with just like seven celebrities who live in the live in the hills above
who
it.
Just drop three dimes every time.
Yeah,
you walk in.
I know a lot of people who like or places like McCall's, the butcher shop, where it's just like not that many people can afford to buy this high dollar food.
No.
But all it takes is just
a
like,
people that keeps the
you know, some rich ass lady to just be like, oh, I'm going to make dinner tonight. And then like, you just made,
well,
you just made our week.
All the time. Cause I'm in there just even buying a baguette, or I used to go in there and buy cookies once in a while. Even when I'm not buying meat, I'll be in there getting bread and somebody will be dropping $400 on steak and like, nah, what's the occasion? Somebody will like across the counter be like, what's the occasion? Like, I don't know. I just got a couple coming over for dinner tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, God damn it.
All right, Luke.
It's a Tuesday, you know me. Anyways.
Nothing special.
I mean, I've eaten mostly trash this week, but...
that's okay.
Frito pies count, toasty locos.
Trash is good sometimes.
Last night for dinner, I had a double quarter pounder, so that's the trash version.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, after I did a catering gig at
the dark
side. 1:30 in the morning, I was like, hey, Uber driver, can you stop? Get me. And he's like, really, man? Yeah, I was like, you were just telling me you made mussels for it. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to eat, like, I don't ever want to eat the fucking shit that I make. I'm like,
hell no.
I'm like, give me some fucking fries and a burger, and I'm going to cry into my fucking soda. Orange soda.
Orange too.
Yeah. I went off,
If you're gonna go, you gotta go all the way.
Yeah, exactly. All the way.
McDonald's orange soda.
Yeah, but the thing is, they don't do the orange. It was orange Hi-C for years, and now it's fucking orange soda. Like, knock it off, guys. What the fuck are you doing? Carbonated now. It's
got
like,
it.
Yeah, it's fucking a disappointment. I'll still drink it. I'm not happy.
Whenever
about
I think of orange drink, whatever that is, I just think like that was to me. That was like the standard soda order when you were a kid for a Happy Meal.
Yeah, the orange drink.
You got orange drink.
I think that's like, probably why
like,
I'm
like,
so
like somehow upset about it. In some parents' mind, just color wise, they were like, "Oh, come on, yeah, like an 8-year-old's gonna get a Coke." He's going to have orange drink. Equal amounts of sugar, equal amounts of everything.
Nothing
horrible.
Real in it. Yeah.
The 80s were wild, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Lids of weed and orange drink.
For days.
Well, today, which was actually fucking stumbled upon, went to Grand Central Market and got tacos from, I think it's La Michoacan. What is the guy in the front that specializes in like carnitas at Grand Central? Yeah, which is fucking awesome.
Well, they have
awesome.
The big giant copper pot.
And they always give you a free taco, which is I still think is fucking amazing because you don't get anything free ever. And then you walk up to that place and like, they're like, oh, oye pa, and they hand you a fucking taco. And I'm like, me?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not special. Yeah.
I love that part about it.
It's fucking awesome. Yeah. And that's sales. Like, you hand me a snack and lure me in with that.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. But, so they lured me in and I got a plate. I got three carnitas tacos, and then I realized. But I did it.
Speaking of mini burritos, those things are
they're
huge.
And but I got it without. See, I'm on the no carb thing, so I got three with no tortilla, and then I got two tripe tacos. Because what I'm saying is, I discovered they have tripe.
I didn't know they had tripe.
I didn't either. But now they changed their sign and they have a whole pig.
Right.
And they fucking everything on there. So I was like, oh, you guys have tripe? And he's like, yeah, we have tripe, but it's not crispy. It's stewed. I'm like, fucking done. Yep. Take it. And
love it.
So I
just ate 3 pounds of loose meat on a plate.
I didn't. I ended up wasting half of it because I'm a piece of shit.
Did they just have a super soaker?
I always order everywhere.
Did they just have a super soaker and sprayed you down with hog?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Open
and
up, fatty.
And then I started. I got it with a side of chicharrón. And so I used it. I did it like I
I'm
topped
sweating
it.
Right
topped
now.
It with, yeah, salsa, all the fucking onion, cilantro, but. Found seating outside in front of Horse Thief, and when I went up to get a napkin and a fork, which I needed, I was like, oh, barbecue sauce. And I took some of Horse Thief's barbecue sauce dunked the carnitas from that place into the Horse Thief barbecue sauce, and it was fucking amazing. And I literally, John from Cato, I like put it on my Instagram, and he's like, holy shit, man. I was like, yes, dude.
That's a great idea.
It's dunking chicharrón, carnitas, Horse Thief barbecue sauce. Lights out, yeah.
I guarantee within a week that barbecue sauce is going to be in an iron.
It's going to be. I realized that I was like,
it's going to be like a Subway token person in New York.
I'm like, I didn't order any barbecue or any Horse Thief. Are they going to think I'm stealing? And I was just like, fork, like, you know, I'm like, there are 10 cents of barbecue sauce I took, but sorry, Horse Thief.
That's tough because you go to that taco place and you bought like $3 worth of meat.
Yeah.
And then you walk across to Grand Central Market where it's like, $28 for a lunch at Horse Thief, and you're like,
beating the fucking system, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't pour it on the side or on the
actual a little
stuff.
Squirt, but that's a great idea.
Yeah, it was just a little, little dunkers, but
maybe there could be a collaboration between the two restaurants.
Well,
they sell
beer.
And then put weed on it.
They sell beer, so if you want to be guilt-free, you just get like a pint.
Get a beer, pay for your barbecue.
Perfect compromise. Buy a beer, get a squirt.
Yeah, don't steal, guys.
Unless it's barbecue sauce from Horse Thief.
With the money that you're saving from not buying food at Horse Thief, you can get a whole fucking six-pack.
Yeah. You can just buy strangers alcohol walking by if you don't buy the Horse Thief brisket. You're good.
You don't even need to validate.
Mm-mm.
Just pay the full price. All right, Luke. Well, thank you so much for doing
this. Thanks for having me, guys.
It was a treat. People can follow you. What's your social media?
Instagram is _Luke_Reyes. Yeah, and
_Luke_Reyes, and then
lohafood.com. Lohafood.
Lohoja
food.com.
Yeah.
And that's where to look for upcoming events.
Yeah, so on my social media and Loha Food has all our upcoming events. We actually are doing in February a Valentine's big party dinner, like pre-Valentine's stoned with your lover kind of fucking weird
super
sensual
fun.
Shit. Yeah.
Mm.
Massages, not really, but yeah, it'll be a tasting big
steal
party.
My ball gag idea.
There are now.
Yeah, ramen through
totally
a ball
chill.
Gag.
I'll do massages.
Yeah, I'll be giving. I'm not cooking. I'm just be giving out
Jason's
massages.
Jason's gonna be giving out free massages. Not creepy.
I got big hands, baby. Great. Thank you, Luke.
And then 9th Street Ramen.
And 9th Street Ramen, yeah.
9th Street Ramen opening eventually. Around Valentine's Day?
Yeah, probably later than that. But yeah.
Opening around Coachella week one or week two?
Yeah, we're going to be we'll be headlining main stage.
Got it.
Coachella week one, week two's for losers.
Hell yeah. Follow me at social media, at themjeans. Hashtag underconnorparo does not have social media. It's trending now. Mm-hmm. It's true. I showed you, right?
Yeah, he sent me a picture.
Yeah, there's a thing. He doesn't have social media, and that's it's turning into a
force you to get your brother social media. Is it just the two of
once.
You?
I don't think that's trending.
No, there's like 10 different people who have used that hashtag now across
the
world.
He's going to use it. Nothing to do with this.
Trending's in air quotes, but all right, yeah.
For you,
thanks, Stewie.
We'll take 10 hashtags.
It was fun. I looked at the picture and it was Stewie in London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Stewie. He's having a good time. Rest in peace, Stewie.
He's in London and having a bit of fish and chips with a pint cunt. TheStewPodcast.com is where all the old episodes live, and you can go on iTunes, give us a nice rating and review, and subscribe. It'll only take a minute. And thank you so much for listening, and Merry Christmas if we don't talk to you before that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Merry Christmas.
Bye.